First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, our first hour of the show today was brought to you by Total Wine. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll love what you find at Total Wine and more. Check out TotalWine.com today. Drink responsibly. Be 21. As we are back for some more First Name Sports, halfway home on a Tuesday afternoon. You know, sometimes, and maybe this is just a generational thing, I can't speak to the way things were with the previous generation. I'm just 28. But sometimes there are these weird beefs or situations behind closed doors where we're all playing a guessing game as to what's going on. You know, and the analogy that I used in show prep to talking to John Bellmer, sometimes if you're a single guy like myself and you talk to women and for one reason or another you don't understand why they're not getting back to you or why something might have gone sideways and the communication breaks off, you may never actually know what it was that resulted in, you know, her not being interested anymore. Like, it just sometimes doesn't happen. And, you know, it's just part of life. Well, part of sports nowadays seems to be that these things just pop up out of nowhere. And, you know, last year in the NFL, at around this time, it was kind of the offseason of the Kyler Murray saga with the Arizona Cardinals and the video game clause. And then he gets his payday. Or maybe that was 2 years ago. But regardless, that was a big offseason thing for Kyler Murray whenever it happened. And he did the social media scrub. Other times you hear about the social media scrub or you hear about reports of somebody being at odds with the franchise, and but then the player stays on that roster and it doesn't quite materialize into a situation that needs to be, terminated. And everybody's okay. And, you know, there's, you know, certain like cryptic social media posts that it's interesting how like, this is one of the annoying things about social media. Like, athletes kind of use it to weaponize their own stances on certain issues and think that they're really empowering themselves and striking fear into the teams that they're under contract with if they're not happy, when the teams sometimes just have to call their bluff. Little things like that. And so whatever's going on here with Stephon Diggs and the Buffalo Bills, he was not at mandatory minicamp today. And Sean McDermott was just like, yeah, this is not something that we are all confident about right now. Here's what he said.
Steph is not here. Everybody else is here at the current time.
How concerned are you about that?
Oh, very concerned. Yeah, very concerned. I'm not going to get into, and listen, I respect everyone's questions and what they want to know about our team. Right now, I'm not going to get into that anymore. So we'll talk about practice. Happy to do that. Happy to answer those questions. And we'll move forward from there.
We need the Allen Iverson drop. We're talking about practice. Not a game. But that's where the Bills are at, and everybody else is we have mandatory minicamps. And yesterday we talked about Saquon Barkley not at the Giants mandatory minicamp. But the Barkley thing we know is very much a contractual thing. Stephon Diggs has gotten his nice payday from the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, maybe there is going to be something here that all gets handled behind closed doors, and maybe we never find out. Maybe it's not that public, and whatever's going on remains kind of kept under wrap. Josh Allen today in speaking with the media on Stephon Diggs. Albert Breer tweets, Allen says, quote, I know internally we're working on some things, not football related, but Steph, he's my guy. Excuse my I love him. He's a brother of mine. This does not work, what we're doing here, without him. So there's a lot of ambiguity there. There's a lot of okay, well, something's going on, and what is it? And then we hear from Adisa Bakari, I hope I pronounced that right, Diggs' agent, saying that Stephon Diggs is in Buffalo. He has been in Buffalo since Monday morning, took his physical, met with Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, the head coach and the general manager, the last couple days, and he will be there for the entirety of minicamp. So, maybe there was something that caught everybody off guard. Present Monday, says Mike Florio, he notes that Diggs was present at the facility this morning and then left before the start of practice. So, again, we're kind of just throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks, but this is a very kind of common thing now, I feel at least, when we see these social media scrubs or we hear about somebody going radio silent and you don't really know why it's happening, but you know that something's out there and you just hope if you're the team that it doesn't become too toxic, that it doesn't become something that becomes a bigger problem. Because I will remind you that it was a while ago now, but Stephon Diggs became a little bit of a locker room problem in Minnesota. Stephon Diggs eventually got traded, and obviously it worked out great because the Vikings were used the first round pick on Justin Jefferson, but it didn't seem like Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kirk Cousins in Minnesota were all seeing eye to eye, and that was with a Vikings team that had contention aspirations, and they still decided we need to move on from Stephon Diggs. There was some video during the divisional round of last year's playoffs when the Bengals went to Western New York and clobbered the Bills about how, Diggs seemed to be a bit of a hothead on the sideline, not too happy, and maybe that's just heat of the moment stuff. You're in a playoff game, you're losing, etc. But wherever we're going with this, there's something going on which we don't know, and where it goes from here, I don't really know. It could be a huge deal. It could be a nothing burger. Perhaps it's just as simple as, a family emergency that he attends to and everything's fine. So, I don't think any of us have a crystal ball here and know what's going to happen with Stephon Diggs. And I don't know that how many people are privy to inside information as to what is going on at this present time with Stephon Diggs. But this is just bizarre and weird. And we've talked a lot about how anytime when you think about roster building and the Bills specifically, they have not been able to get a ton of other pass-catching threats after Diggs in their offense. Like Gabe Davis at times has done some things. Dawson Knox at times did some things for their offense, but they ended up drafting, I believe it was Dalton Kincaid in the first round of this draft at tight end. So, there are different things that they've tried to do, but all of that, the reason we bring up some of these other players at skill positions for Buffalo is because they haven't had a ton behind Diggs, and now Diggs isn't there, so they really need him. When it comes to non-quarterbacks in the NFL, there's a reason Diggs got that big contract. He's integral to what Buffalo does and will continue to be, and we just don't have – I hope we get more information. I hope there's more stuff out there. And Belmer mentioned that Adam Schefter seemed to voice some confidence on Twitter about, he's moving in the right direction. This should get taken care of. And, everything's going to be okay with Stephon Diggs. But you hear from the Bills, you know, that's the coach saying he's very concerned to the media today after this just happened. So I don't know. It's just bizarre, awkward vibes there in Buffalo. And, I mean, next to Josh Allen, you know, after that, there might not be a more important player for the Bills. So, you know, I don't want to get into how this might impact the AFC East or the AFC without knowing what's going on here. But certainly the ramifications are that big. Because he got a big contract for a reason, as I said. And this is just weird. Again, I hope we get more information because I'd like to know how a player of this status seems to just disappear on a day's notice, you know, or on that day, the way Diggs seemed to have today. But until then, all we can do is try and speculate and guess as to what might be going on, and that's not really productive for anybody. We'll take a timeout. Let's talk about a wide receiver that is at his team's mandatory minicamp, also in the AFC, back in the AFC North even. If you haven't guessed by now who I'm talking about, I'll tell you on the other side. First in sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, I'll just say it. Odell Beckham Jr. is full go for the Baltimore Ravens at their minicamp. And there is no such Stephon Diggs drama here. As Odell is at Ravens minicamp and I guess it's just a week. I figured it can't be much longer because training camps are in a little over a month. But however long it is, he's there and was talking to the media today. And when we think about Odell Beckham Jr.'s career, it's really an interesting one because he was amazing with the Giants, right? He made that catch on Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys that some people think is the greatest catch ever. But as his time wore on with the Giants, I mean, there was the infamous yacht trip before the playoff game against the Packers. And most of Odell's tenure with the Giants, they didn't win a lot. Now, in sports other than basketball, I think it's a little unfair to just pin that on an individual. Basketball, a little more individualized. I think it makes a little more sense to where if you're one of the best players, your team should be pretty good most years. But then Odell gets traded to Cleveland, and his Cleveland time was mostly forgettable. As he plays three seasons with the Browns, and matter of fact, the Browns have some success as a team and go to the divisional round of the playoffs in 2020, and he's injured and not there for it. Then he comes back in 2021 and ends up getting cut. And then, you know, so we're like, well, what is this? What kind of player is this guy? You know, because his Cleveland time was, as I said, pretty forgettable. But then at the end of the 2021 season, as the Rams are progressing towards what ended up being a Super Bowl championship, you see the flashes again of, oh, that guy can play. And in part, that's because Cooper Kupp was, I think, winning the receiving Triple Crown that year, leading the league in touchdowns, yards, and receptions. But I don't think, and before tearing his ACL in the Super Bowl against Cincinnati, Odell was on his way to being the Super Bowl MVP. So, what do we have here in Odell Beckham Jr., now 16 months removed from that ACL tear in the Super Bowl of February of 2022? And, you know, I'm very intrigued by this because now he's on a roster in which he's not a secondary option. There is no Cooper Kupp. He's supposed to be the guy here for Lamar. Now, they have Mark Andrews, who's one of the best tight ends in football. They got Rashad Bateman coming back, who they think can be a little bit more impactful, I'm sure. He was a guy they took in the first round. Took Zay Flowers out of Boston College in the first round. So, there are other playmakers, but I think that if you told me right now who's going to lead the Baltimore Ravens in receiving, most would probably say Odell Beckham Jr. And Odell said, quote, a simple quote here, but I think worth noting that it, quote, felt good to get out of bed and not feel pain. So we're talking about a guy that's not injured now, and we think that the Cleveland years for Odell were mostly a flush it type of, you know, it's like Randy Moss on the Raiders, right? Does anybody remember that? Now, I'm not saying Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be immediately become one of the best receivers in football again, but could we be talking about a Pro Bowl season? Could he have 1,100 yards, let's say? I think those are kinds of, you know, benchmarks that are on the table. Now, let's keep in mind, even before the ACL tear, I mentioned his time in Cleveland. He was dinged up, you know, when the Browns made that push, got in the playoffs, and beat the Steelers. He has some injury problems with the Giants. So this is a guy that his entire career has been off and on the field. But the other thing I heard today from Odell that I think is interesting is that he is going to go to Florida and train and work out with Lamar Jackson after minicamp before training camp. So that seems like somebody that's ready, bracing for a big year. And I know it's a new quarterback, and you want to try and get on the same page from a timing standpoint. But I feel like if we're talking about, well, Odell's back a year from now, or at the end of this season, that won't be a huge surprise. Because 16 months nowadays is a long time to come back from an ACL injury. Now, I understand that usually it's like 9 to 12 months, and you think about the way it played out with him last year. You know, was he going to sign somewhere in December or January? And then was a playoff team going to want to try and, you know, work him into their receiving rotation? Like, it was kind of funky, the timing of all of this. And so I think maybe it ends up being for the better that Odell just got the whole year to recover and to recuperate. And now you hear him saying it feels good to get out of bed and not feel pain. So we have a fully healthy Odell Beckham Jr. who is not old, by the way. I mean, he's 30. And, you know, could he have two or three big seasons with the Ravens? Could there be a little bit of a blast from the past here? I mean, gosh, we're all talking about DeAndre Hopkins and where he might end up. Hopkins is 31. Now, I'm sure we can all look at DeAndre Hopkins and realize that, you know, he doesn't have quite the lengthy injury history that Odell Beckham Jr. has. But when you hear it from Odell that he's getting out of bed, not feeling pain, feeling pretty good, I think that there's a very interesting 2023 here for the entire Baltimore Ravens franchise, because the Lamar thing is behind them. And even while the Lamar stuff was going on, they were a playoff team. They almost beat Cincinnati last year, who's been one of the best teams in the AFC the last few years. They had them on the ropes in Cincinnati in that playoff game. And not only do they get Lamar back, but they have not just Odell. I mentioned those other guys. Rashad Bateman will come back. Zay Flowers maybe comes in and contributes right away as a rookie. J.K. Dobbins, 2 years removed from that ACL tear. As much as we look at Lamar Jackson and the Ravens as an offense, it's been like offensive line, pound the rock with different backs, that kind of thing. They actually look at what they have here as an offensive skill player group, and it's not bad. And we always know that they're good in the trenches on both sides of the ball. So, you know, if I was a Ravens fan, I'd be pretty jacked up that the soap opera with Lamar is over and that it seems like Odell is just going to play football, which is another thing that you should like if you're a Raven fan or if you just, you know, like football, is that it seems like we're just going to get Odell the football player. And perhaps there is some prima donna-ing and some diva type stuff that, you know, comes up during the season, but right now he's talking like a guy that just wants to play football. He's going to go train with his new quarterback in Florida after the mini camp, and I would expect him to have a big year. And I think that he gives the Ravens something that they haven't had in a while, because you think about the way they've built their teams. It's, as I've always said, usually like trenches, great defenders at all three levels of the defense, and usually a lot of running. And, you know, that goes all the way back to the team that won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer. Great defense, Jamal Lewis in the backfield, smash mouth ball. You know, and so you think about some of the receivers they have had, Derek Mason, Torrey Smith, Anquan Boldin at the end of his career, you know, not bad. But, you know, they've had some good tight ends, Todd Heap, now Mark Andrews. But Odell Beckham Jr., best receiver for the Ravens in a long time, potentially, if this works out as much as I think it could. Because while he might be an old 30, he's still 30, and I think there's some football left in Odell for sure. We will take a timeout. Willie Ramirez on the other side, the AP Vegas sports reporter, will join in as the Golden Knights look to hoist Lord Stanley tonight on home ice. We'll discuss Game 5, Stanley Cup Final with Willie Ramirez. First thing in sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty, as we go back out to the Progressive Guest Line, we talked plenty of NBA Finals earlier in the show. We could crown a champion tonight in the National Hockey League as we bring on Willie Ramirez, covers Vegas sports for the AP. Always good to talk about the Vegas teams with Willie. It's good to have you aboard again. Willie, how you doing?
Always glad to join with you, Greg. Appreciate it. I'm looking at the skyline as we speak, headed to T-Mobile Arena.
I imagine there's a lot of confidence in the air amongst the Knights faithful that tonight is the coronation, right?
There is. You know, what's funny is there's a lot of confidence in and around Las Vegas with the fan base, the Golden Knights locker room. But you know where else? A lot of confidence yesterday in the Panthers locker room.
Okay.
When I went out to practice and for their media availability.
All right. Well, let me ask you about that, because I talked about it earlier in the show about how if I'm Florida, because it sure feels like it ends tonight, but they do have to play the game. And if you're Florida, it feels like they have to get out early, get a goal, perhaps get another goal, and play with a lead. They haven't done enough of that, and stay out of the penalty box. I know you're, you know, on the Vegas side of the equation, and you know the Knights better, but that's got to be the path for Florida tonight, right?
Well, the one thing that they touched on more than anything is, yes, playing smart, playing clean, but also playing better for Sergei Bobrovsky. They've really taken ownership of how they played in front of him in the losses in this series, and said that it's on them to do a better job in front of him, because a lot of the goals they don't put on him. The other thing that the thing that they really touched on yesterday was that no matter what scrum you went to, they're all asking, well, you guys are so banged up. They're like, we've been banged up.
Yeah.
All year we've been banged up. You think about this Panthers team. We've talked about them throughout the season, whether it's writing about them or talking about them. it's kind of been the streaky team in the Eastern Conference, right? There was Boston. Yep. You saw the Rangers make a run. Carolina was the preseason Eastern Conference favorite. Florida would make these weird runs, and it was always sort of on whether or not they were healthy or not or banged up. So they've been used to doing this, the next man up mentality, and they really just shrugged it off and said, hey, we've been here before. We battled injuries, and we did come back from a 3-1 deficit against Boston.
Yeah, and that's the point that I wanted to touch on as well. They literally have been in this exact situation, and no disrespect to the Knights. The Bruins were a historic opponent given their regular season. So it sounds like that may be something that Florida's leaning on, and at the same time, I'm sure the Knights are aware of that first round, right?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, what I think one of the good things that Vegas has done, and Bruce Cassidy has done a good job with this team, and the veteran leadership with the former Stanley Cup champions that are on this roster, is they haven't necessarily paid attention to the hype of or accomplishments of the other team, right? Think about the teams that they've gone through. They sort of just raced through Winnipeg with Connor Hellebuck. Then they had Edmonton, and everyone doubted that they would be able to slow down Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And lo and behold, four lines was better than two great players.
Right.
Then it was the Dallas Stars and what they were doing, and Peter DeBoer, and the whole, you know, the sort of a revenge series, if you would. They really have just ignored any hype about the opposition. And with the original six on this team from the 2018 Stanley Cup team that lost to Washington, they admitted at Media Day that in that year they were a little shell-shocked and they were a little frazzled and they were a little starry-eyed about the whole Stanley Cup thing. Whereas this year, it kind of just feels like, oh, ho-hum, we've been to the playoffs 5 of the 6 years and we're in our second Stanley Cup. We know what to do.
Yeah, and I think that not only mentally it puts them in a good place, but you look at the way so many different guys can beat the opponents for the Knights, and I look at a guy like Chandler Stephenson popping 2 in game 4, and you know, I don't even think of him as maybe a top 5 Conn Smythe candidate for the Golden Knights, and the fact that they can win a game like that, and how well they've played in closeout games, too. Really taking control of Game 6 in Edmonton, a whitewashing of the Stars in Game 6 of the Western Conference Final. It feels like this is a team that collectively, they get everybody going when they smell blood in the water.
They really do, and that's exactly right. That when they get going, it's lights out, and it's just a domino effect, and anybody can score once they get hot, and they get on this run, they start playing in their rhythm. It's sort of been their trademark, and I think that's what you're going to see tonight with the energy in T-Mobile Arena, you know, just the vibe of this team. I think they want to win it here. I think they know they got 3 chances to do it, but if anything, they want to take advantage of a Florida team that's banged up, mm-hmm. whether or not they could play or not. Whoever, you know, yesterday there were several guys that didn't get on the ice. But I think, Paul Maurice said today, he knows whether or not Tkachuk's playing. He's just not going to tell us. And we'll find out when they take the ice for warmups. I personally think the guy's going to play. But the Golden Knights, as you mentioned Chandler Stephenson. He's a great example. This is a guy last year when the Golden Knights lost over 500 man games due to injury. He was the one guy that moved up and down the lineup. DeBoer had him in the first 3 lines on any given night. And because he was so adaptable to so many different players, he knows those lines. He knows each guy. He knows the forwards he can play with. That's what makes him so valuable. That's what makes a lot of these guys so valuable, is what they went through last year in so many interchangeable parts because of the injuries. That's why they run 4 lines so strong. You add in the experience. You add in the former Stanley Cup champions. And let's not forget, there's 2 guys on this team that are offensive superstars that left really bad situations to come to a winning program in Mark Stone and Jack Eichel.
You know, and that's where I wanted to go next, because it's crazy to think that it's just those 6 players you mentioned that are holdovers from the 2018 Western Conference champion team in their inaugural season. But when you mention Stone, when you mention Eichel, obviously a guy like Pietrangelo coming from a much better situation, having won a Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues, they're able to bring in these guys who really make, you know, all of that adds to the infrastructure. They had different coaches. And, you know, if I'm a player that's a free agent or maybe, looking for a new situation via trade, or maybe I'm, you know, a prospect getting drafted. It just seems like any way I can find my way to the Vegas Golden Knights, it's a place I want to be because they've cultivated such a good culture, right?
Yeah, that's been ever since, like, the first major acquisition, you know, when they got Ryan Reeves the first year, and then they got Max Pacioretty, and then they got Paul Stastny, and then it was Mark Stone. It was coming here and seeing the arena and playing in front of that crowd and hearing the crowd that first year. Then it was the vibe that they would get through, you know, you have friends in the league and you're here in the scuttlebutt and where's the place to go? And if you're a free agent, where do you want to go? It was always the chemistry in the locker room. It was always, you know, just coming here and realizing that Vegas is more than the strip and seeing the town and then talking to Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee and Bill Foley and just the guys. This is, you know, and that's bled over. That's not just the Golden Knights. We just crowned the Las Vegas Aces in the WNBA. They have Candace Parker and Alicia Clark. I mean, Candace Parker will go down as one of the greatest WNBA players. Alicia Clark, who had ever thought she'd be a sixth woman? This is a town where pro sports is somewhat taken over because everybody wants to play here.
Yeah, and let me end there. We talked at the beginning about the vibe in Vegas, and, you know, what about the relationship with the community and this team is it? Because it just feels like they were the first of the major four North American pro leagues to get there, and it feels like the Knights are always going to be a big deal in Vegas.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a collection of things. It's the first of the four major, you know, big names in sports. It's also, you have to remember that the final exhibition game of that season, hours later, was the October 1 shooting. So the largest mass shooting in U.S. history, that brought the community together. And then going to the Stanley Cup, nobody had ever experienced this. Hey, this is all well and good in the first 6 years and going to the playoffs and two Stanley Cups. I always tell people, you know what, you guys have it so good that when this team falls off, at some point there's going to be a lull with this franchise that you guys are spoiled. So right now the Las Vegas fans are this fan base is spoiled with what the Golden Knights are doing. But it's organic. It's all theirs. It's not the Raiders. It's not the Aces came from San Antonio. They rebuilt that brand. But in a sense, they feel the Golden Knights is their team.
Hey, Willie, 60 seconds. Just what's the latest with the A's potentially ending up in Vegas?
You know what? I am so far removed on purpose. Until I hear legislature, they're up in legislation in Carson City, until I hear a definite what they're doing and what the government is going to agree to do, I am not buying into anything when it comes to that franchise. So, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, no. It does seem like it's still a lot of back and forth thing right now, and you know who knows how that ends. Maybe I've heard some stuff. Maybe John Fisher has to sell the team, so perhaps there's another twist there with the A's potentially ending up in Vegas. But we know the Knights are there, and they'll try and win the Stanley Cup tonight. Willie, always good to chat with you. Willie Ramirez, AP sports writer covering the Vegas teams. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
You bet. All right, we will take one final time out here on a Tuesday afternoon, and we had some major game show news break yesterday. Fun little story to wrap things up. I always feel like these kind of fluffy stories are good for the end of the show, and that's what we're going to do next. He's John Bellmer, our producer. My name is Greg Frank. This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, as we wrap things up here on a Tuesday afternoon, Pat Sajak is going to do a send-off tour as the Wheel of Fortune host announced last night that the upcoming season of the game show, which begins in September, will be his last. And Delmer and I were chuckling about this a little bit in pre-show because I was first like, really? Like a game show host gets a send-off tour? Before we go any further, I want to remind you that this segment is brought to you by Total Wine & More. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find all of your favorites at the lowest prices at Total Wine. Total Wine has been the best for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. You're okay with this, though. A send-off season for Pat Sajak.
Sure. Sure, because he's been there that long. Right. When you do something for that long, sure, you want to, you know, acknowledge it and, you know, get all your goodbyes, and they're going to do a whole thing, I'm sure. But it is a little much.
So
right?
Because that's the thing. I look at game shows and I do watch them sometimes when I need to kill some time. And, you know, if I'm maybe nothing else to do, I'll see if Game Show Network has something on that I like to at least. It stimulates the brain a little bit. And it's about the show, not the host. I like game shows because of the way you play them and because of how you think about the answers. And, like, I like Family Feud because you don't have to have a lot of book smarts behind that, but they're fun, like, survey questions. It's like stuff we do on the radio. Yeah, exactly.
I think they have the best theme, too.
You know, like, a survey question for Family Feud could literally be a segment that we did on this show not that long ago. Name an industry that requires a tip. The number one answer, I bet you, would be bartender. Hairdresser would be lower.
Number one answer for me, radio producer.
So, and now, see, Belmer, you made a good point, though, in show prep. You're like, I don't really like Steve Harvey, so I stopped watching The Feud. So the host is a little more important for you.
Not always, but Steve Harvey was annoying enough that it drove me away. I think if you have the right host with the right games, you can build it up.
So it sounds like you look at the host position of a game show as don't screw it up. You might be able to add to it, but don't subtract from it.
Right.
And if I like the game show enough, I'll watch.
I agree.
Because it's interesting. Pat Sajak and Alex Trebek were the two, at least of my era. I know a lot of older people remember Richard Dawson with the Match Game and Bob Barker with The Price is Right. Like, those guys are a little bit older. I didn't grow up with them. Pat Sajak and Alex Trebek were the two that I definitely, remember. I think, at least for me growing up, 7 o'clock Eastern was Jeopardy, and then 7:30 was Wheel of Fortune. But I don't, as much as Alex Trebek, I think, had that kind of Jeopardy, like, nerdy but also, like, cool enough kind of guy perception and persona, I knew that when I watched Jeopardy, it was the book smart, like, you need to be a whiz to do well on this show type of game show. And while I don't think that the show's as good without Alex Trebek, I think if I want to learn something, I can put on Jeopardy, I'm going to learn something. And that's that, regardless of who the host is. Wheel of Fortune, it's all about, you know, can you solve the puzzles? Can you put words together? And do you have an eye for those kinds of things? Pat Sajak's not helping or hurting my ability to solve the puzzle. Like, so, I don't know. Like, a send-off tour seems a little over the top. And so, the question is, how important is the game show host to the quality of the show? I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, like, utmost importance, 1 being irrelevant, I'm like a 3. You disagree? You had a perplexed, like, you thought I was going to come in higher than that.
Yeah, I did think you were going to come in higher than that, because I think it's probably 50-50.
Really?
You have great games, you can have a host that's not as good, right? Like Steve Harvey. I love Family Feud. I don't like Steve Harvey necessarily. So it does take away from it. But if Pat Sajak was hosting Family Feud, I might like it more.
So you like Pat Sajak?
I like Pat Sajak, but I'm
just
saying.
But you don't
saying,
like the game Wheel of Fortune?
Not really.
So you don't watch
it's
Wheel
okay.
of Fortune?
I watch it because my dad watches it. He was losing his mind yesterday over this Pat Sajak news. What are they going to do? Because he's afraid they're going to just end the show. And his favorite game show he watches,
like,
every night is going,
like,
away.
I don't mean this to offend your dad. That's crazy that you could think that. Like, the show doesn't – that's like ending a sport when – like, does basketball stop when LeBron retires?
Well, I don't think it's quite like that, right? I mean, the show could end and everybody would go about their business like nothing ever happened. If the NBA folded, there would be a whole nother story. Like, it's not quite on that level.
You get my point.
I get your point.
Okay.
But the
show is bigger than the host. The game is bigger than any one player. That's the point.
Yes, but I also think that they could just get rid of the show, and I don't think it would really affect much. I mean, there'd be a lot of people that would miss their game show in the middle of the day, but you could watch other stuff.
That's true.
It would be a lot less effective than
your daily life would be negatively impacted more by a sport.
We don't need Wheel of Fortune. Okay? We don't.
I think I could be a good game show host, though.
I think you could.
I think there's a bravado that I think I could carry with getting along with. Because I'm a people person. I want to shoot the breeze and have fun. And, I think if I needed to pinch hit and do an MC of any kind of event, I think I could do that.
Which game show you want?
Probably The Feud.
Yeah, take it from Harvey. I'm fine with that.
Well, you'll start watching again, right?
I will.
You'll be like, that's my guy.
Yep.
I groomed him.
You got to get your family on there first.
Yeah, I do. I said, I got a family of five, so it's perfect. Two siblings, mom and dad, happily married over 30 years. So, you know what? I don't know how you actually do that. How competitive do you think it is to get on these games?
Oh, I bet it's really competitive.
That's what I was thinking.
I bet it's tough as
now,
hell.
Do you think... What drives the desire to be on game shows? Is it just easy money you can make? Is it the fame of being on a game show? Because because I agree that it's probably really hard, but why do you think it's so hard?
It's got to be the money, but I don't think it's the fame because nobody really gets famous unless you do something.
Well, by
stupid
by
or
fame,
crazy.
I meant you can say I was on Wheel
TV,
of Fortune,
I understand.
Family Feud.
That's probably the people are fans and they see an opportunity to do it, right? For example, let's use your sports example. You can be a Rockets fan all day. You're probably not playing for the Rockets, but
I see what you're
if
saying.
If you like
you
Family
can be a fan
Feud,
of the show and play the show.
And maybe you could get on there and there's just sort of a draw to
like
that.
Like there's a wow factor.
Yeah.
Because
the taxes and if you win a car, for example, some people can't even take the car because they can't afford the taxes on it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's that bad. I don't know if the prizes are necessarily the ultimate draw. I think it's the, I get to be on a.
It's
on
just
a,
the experience.
Yeah, the experience, yeah.
Which, okay, so now that's interesting. We say that the experience is what drives a lot of people to be on the show, but before we jumped on today, I was talking about how my old co-host Fred Fowler would think, oh, watching game shows, that's an old person behavior of yours. So why would it be that the experience would be so coveted, but the viewing demographic that watches these shows is all retired people?
That's interesting.
You never thought of it that way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no.
Why do we all want to be on a show that we also mock younger people for watching?
Well, I also think you're a little bit different because I will say there's a generation right behind you that could care less about game shows.
But they would also wouldn't want to be on the show then, right? Or you're
probably
saying,
not. Right, they probably so wouldn't have a desire
right, like
to.
That, it just strikes me as odd. That'd be like, to make another sports analogy, some being like, I really don't like watching these games, but I want to go every time I can because the experience is it that good to be on in the stadium for a game to where, and you don't even watch it? Is it that much of a 0 to 100 with the game show experience, too? I don't know until I actually...
In person has to be 0 to 100 type of experience. It has to be really exhilarating. Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Maybe I just answered my question.
The spirit of competition,
Yeah, being in the fight as opposed to just watching two other families or two other people. Where were you on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Regis Philbin was always the guy, but then Meredith Vieira did it for a while. Did you like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I thought it was less... hard, or I guess just I'll say easier. I thought it was easier to have success on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire than Jeopardy. Because you had lifelines on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. 100%.
My favorite moment came from that show.
Where the guy calls his dog all
yes,
time.
That's great. That's
I don't
fantastic.
Actually need you. I just wanted to call you to tell,
you
I'm going to want
$1 million.
Dollars.
Yeah. That's badass.
All right. Well, some good game show talk. That was a spicy segment. Maybe we'll have to revisit our game show viewing pleasures in the summer when things dry up. Perhaps as early as tomorrow. Maybe the Florida Panthers can extend this thing at least one more game. I don't think it's likely, though. I'll go Vegas 3, Florida 1, and the Knights win the Stanley Cup tonight. He's John Bellmer. I'm Greg Frank. This has been First Name Sports. Sports Kings is up on the other side. I'm back tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.